The Business Buzz Podcast.
The Business Buzz.
Good day and welcome to the Business Buzz right here on VAL FM 88.1 for your weekly dose of business, finance and economics news right here on your favorite VAL FM. We're broadcasting live from our studios in Braamfontein, Johannesburg, and my name is Mliwa Mob, Justice Kavaza, and I'll be your host for the next hour. Who's to say that the world of business can't be entertaining? Definitely make sure you hold on to your seats as we seek to unpack and keep you entertained, educated and intrigued about the world of business. Now, for today, we are talking about a phenomenon that is, it's nothing new, but it's definitely something that's taken hold. People have been forced to get into it because of the lockdowns and COVID-19, and that is e-learning. Because as COVID-19 has happened, one of the fundamental shifts is that we've seen kids doing a lot of e-learning at the moment, a lot of online classes, Zoom, that sort of thing. And there's been this great debate happening about whether or not to open schools or not. And we've been seeing, you know, slowly but surely, the government opening up the education space, particularly for primary and secondary students. And for today, we are going to be talking about what e-learning actually means from a couple of different points of view. We're going to be looking at it from the corporate side of things. And for that, we're going to be talking to Takalani Nechitenze, who is the External Affairs Director for Vodacom South Africa, because Vodacom has been one of the biggest investors in e-learning in South Africa during this period. And even before this, they had very big investments in the space. So we're going to be talking to them about what they're seeing in the space and what actually drove them to do what they do. We're also going to be hearing from a student just around what that shift has looked like from, you know, the learner's point of view. And then we're also going to be talking to Brian Klanger, who is an educator, about what it's looking like from that point of view. He is a program director at Henley Business School, together with being an adjunct lecturer at the Catholic University and a full-time educator at St. David's Marist in Sandton. So, you know, all-round educator who has different levels of education from, you know, you heard St. David's, but at the same time, you've got tertiary learners. So he's going to be giving us some insights into what that looks like. So that's how the show is going to be looking like. Also coming up, we're going to be getting into the business wrap. That's when we tell you the week's top trending business and economics news. And then we'll also tell you the state of your 100 Rand Now Buffalo Index. Remember that you can keep in touch with us on social media. On Facebook, we have our FM, that's Voice of Vits. You can also find our other Facebook page, that is the Vits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VAOFM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. You can also stream the station live on VAOFM.co.za, and remember that podcast of the Business Buzz show and all our content is available on vits.journalism.co.za/business. And then you can also search for us on the popular podcast platforms. That's iono.fm, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and recently, we're now on Spotify as well, so you can go and find us there. So that's how the show is looking like. Definitely make sure you don't turn that dial. On the other side of this, we get into the business wrap.
Business wrap with Lebo Pasha.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz. It's time for us to sort of get into the top trending business and economics news for the week in our business wrap. That's when we get a financial expert to let us know what's what in the world of, you know, business and the economy. And on the line, we're joined by our financial expert. We have Lebo Pasha, who is the general manager for Southern Africa at the African Management Institute, and he's just going to be giving us that roundup. Lebo, greetings to you.
Greetings to you, Mudiwa, and greetings to all of the VAOFM listeners. Well, lockdown greetings.
I like that, lockdown greetings. So I understand that, you know, some of the top economics news of the week, you know, we've seen another interest rate cut. What are things looking like on that end?
Yeah, it's a bit of good news for everybody who who's got any credit or any debt, whether it's your mortgage or it's your car, a personal loan or a credit card. So it's a bit of good news. And yeah, it's following on basically what's happening across the globe. I don't think we need to say it, but we will. It's COVID-19. The pandemic continues to spread globally. It's actually hitting the BRICS countries quite hard right now. We've seen huge rises in cases in Brazil and Russia, and India as well. And on the back of that, the IMF is forecasting that the global GDP, the gross domestic product, will contract by about 4.9% this year. South Africa is much worse off. I think we're seeing forecasts of around the GDP contracting by 7.3%. So this is compared to a 7% contraction that was forecasted in May. So things are getting worse for the economy. We're now going into our second sort of deep lockdown. It's not officially level 5, but it's starting to feel like level 5.
And it's actually quite deep what you're talking about, especially when you're saying that things, we're calling it level 3, but as more restrictions come in and as the cases rise, it does feel like things are more like they were in April. And an industry that has been, you know, suffering over the lockdown period was the restaurants industry. And this week, I understand that they took to the streets.
Yes. So things got quite heated, and as they always do when it affects people's livelihoods. And we've seen a number of restaurants in the major cities, including Joburg, that have shut down temporarily. I think we saw a lot of coverage of Rockets, popular Rockets in Bryanston, which is shutting down temporarily. But we've also seen other restaurants like Pablo Escobar in Melville that might not open its doors again. And I think all it takes is you driving or being in public transport and looking outside when you're going either to work or going to get some food, and you'll see a lot of small SMEs are not opening. So a lot of these small stores are really struggling to survive, and they're not opening. And we've got a lot of stats, and we've got the protest by the restaurant industry. But I think we also need to remember there's a lot of informal players in the food sector that are deeply impacted by the COVID-19 crisis, including some of the hawkers on our streets who aren't able to trade as they were before. I think Joburg City Centre, Sandton as well. If you drive through Sandton, it's extremely quiet because a lot of those hawkers are not able to trade right now. And their clients, all of their clients are working from home. So it's been quite a big impact. We've seen some of the restaurants as well that serve a lot of our listeners from townships who go into some of the suburbs to work and serve all sorts of treats that we enjoy. Some of those restaurants are really struggling right now with their clientele not being in offices, their clientele not being at schools. So it's a really hard time, not just for formal restaurants, but for some of the players in the food and services sector in the more informal space as well.
And then whilst we are, you know, on that, how are the employment and unemployment issues looking like, given some of the new data that that is coming out?
Yeah, we've seen a survey by UCT's National Income Dynamics study, and this is a coronavirus rapid mobile survey. And some of the stats are a bit scary. We haven't seen the official numbers, but they are claiming that in the period from February to April, we've seen 3 million South Africans lose their jobs, with the most hard hit being women, which is quite a big blow for our economy because we know women do drive the well-being of households and are usually the breadwinners in a lot of homes. So women have really bore the brunt of the job losses. The number of people that are hungry, or the number of people who are not getting meals or perpetually hungry, has also increased. So it's some alarming statistics. We've seen professionals losing their jobs. We've seen people with verbal contracts. So these would probably be the person who does your garden or the person who cleans your room or your house are on a verbal contract. If it's not formalized, these people have been hit the most. And also manual laborers. So blue-collar workers have really taken a huge hit when it comes to losing their jobs.
No, it certainly does sound like quite a dire situation. And I remember I was engaging with Facebook the other day, one of the regional director for Facebook Africa, and they actually did a small business study recently, and they were bringing out their results, and they actually echoed, you know, some of those sentiments. So when you hear that overlap, like what you're talking about, that, you know, women have borne the brunt, because their study actually found that about 30 to 40% of businesses that trade using Facebook's business tools, such as the marketplace, etc., they had seen a 30 to 40% closure rate, and the majority of the businesses closing down were female-led enterprises.
Yes, definitely. But on the flip side as well, we've seen Twitter's share price being boosted a bit, because we've got a lot of people who are now moving onto social media platforms, either for marketing or trying to promote their businesses, or just trying to keep in contact with people because of the lockdown. So we've got a lot of that activity. The other thing we've seen as well, we've seen Vodacom coming out to say that they've lost quite a lot of subscribers. This is also definitely indicative of what's happening. They've said they've lost about 2.5 million prepaid customers during lockdown, and that the customers that they've kept have actually used more airtime. So they've had bigger spend, which probably makes sense to where those people who have continued to be employed are now using a lot more data for working from home. So definitely the negative impacts are going across the board. So prepaid customers have also reduced the number of prepaid customers.
Quite a bleak outlook, and quite a bleak picture that's being painted. So that was us with our financial expert, Lebo Pasha, who is the general manager for Southern Africa at the African Management Institute, just giving us a roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news, letting us know about what's going on in terms of interest rates, which were recently cut by the South African Reserve Bank, together with restaurants that are facing a tough time, having taken to the streets to protest the state of the economy. And then we're just seeing that unemployment and you know, some of the business closures are, you know, quite high in the SME sector, according to new pieces of research that are coming out from UCT. So that's it. On the other side of this, we get into the Buffalo Index.
Business Rep with Lebo Pasha. The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz.
Let's tell you the state of your 100 Rand in our Buffalo Index. And for today, because we are talking about e-learning or online education, we decided to go and look at some of the top online courses. And this is according to onlinestudies.com. And they've ranked some of what they call the best online courses in South Africa. And I personally picked about three, which I thought, you know, very interesting, because they're different courses. Courses, you know, just speaking to the type of, you know, the length and breadth of how far you can actually stretch yourself in terms of online education. The first one is a course in Adobe Photoshop Essentials. That is an online program, you know, that's for all the creatives out there that are looking to, you know, flex some of their designing muscles. It's available, you know, it's available online, and you can get it for about 39 buffalos or 3,900 rand. That starts in February 2021, to be done in English, and is part-time. The duration, you know, just depends, and you can actually request with them how it's actually going to be looking like. It's done by the Academy of Digital Arts. And then the second one is, if you have a degree already and you're looking for maybe a postgraduate certificate in education, the University of Nottingham, that's in the United Kingdom, has something called, has something, you know, for you. And the earliest start date usually just depends on what things are looking like. And then in terms of the cost, that's going to be in what are called United, I think it's the Arab Emirates money out there. That's how they're quoting it. And that's going to cost you about 127 buffaloes or 1,200 buffaloes. Sorry, that's about 127,000 rand. So that's more on the pricey side because you are looking at a proper postgraduate qualification there. And then the last one is for everyone who wants to get into some type of project management course, not quite as expensive as the postgraduate, but also not as affordable as the Photoshop. That one from the Academy of York, that's actually available, you know, in places like I know that physically you can actually go to a place like Randburg, but starting in February 2021, so you with about 150 buffaloes or 15,000 rand, you can do a 13-week course just around the project management, and you can choose whether it's going to be full-time or part-time. So that's what your 100 rand looks like in terms of the online education space or e-learning space. That's what we're talking about for today. But we're going to be getting into the main topic in a few minutes, and we'll actually be hearing from the people that are actually teaching, the people that are learning, and the people that are creating and investing in some of these courses. So don't turn that dial, keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz. Forget what the little birdie told you. Follow us at BoFM and join the conversation. You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz. We are talking about online education on today's edition. Remember that you can keep in touch with us on Facebook. We are VowFM, that's Voice of Wits. You can also talk to us on our other Facebook page, that is the Wits Radio Academy. And then on Twitter, we are at VowFM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. So for today, as we spoke about earlier on, we are talking about online education because one of the things that has actually been spurred quite a bit by the current COVID-19 crisis is learners finding new ways to actually, you know, learn that information. And we're going to be talking to a number of players that are actively involved in this e-education, online education, e-learning. You know, those are some of the different words that are being used to describe what's actually going on. And to begin with, we're going to be talking, you know, sort of from the corporate side, because a lot of companies have been, you know, doing initiatives, but I think Vodacom stands out as one of the, you know, big South African corporates that has been investing a lot in online education. So we're joined by Takalani Nechitenze, who is the External Affairs Director at Vodacom South Africa, and just going to be talking about some of the issues that are around this investment, and you know, why they've decided that you know, e-learning is one of the things that they're going to be investing in. Takalani, welcome to the Business Buzz.
Thank you very much for having me, and a good afternoon or good evening.
No. Thank you so much for being with us. I think just as a good point of departure for our listeners is, as Vodacom, you know, why have you guys sort of, why the focus on, you know, e-learning and, you know, online education, that sort of thing? What has been the push? And do you find that you guys were well prepared going into the lockdown, or did the lockdown sort of force an expansion of what you guys were already working on?
Thank you very much. It is the latter, actually, because we are a technology company with a digitalization strategy that forced us being a leader in technological innovation and digitizing the experience of our customers. So we launched our digitalization strategy in 2016, just shortly after the World Economic Forum coined the expression, the fourth industrial revolution. and we have updated it now. It is Vision 2025. So we pride ourselves as a company that drives our digitalization, and we focus on a number of areas. But for purposes of today, we'll be talking about education, because we believe that education is the weapon, you know, that frees people. It is actually, according to former President Mandela, the only tool that can get the child of an ordinary person to become president of a country or to become, you know, a high-powered professional. So we use technology as a tool to facilitate education. And we do this in the context of the sustainable development, using ICTs as a tool for development.
So can you give us just, you know, some flavor around some of the initiatives that you guys actually have going at the moment?
Yes, we run the education program through the Vodacom Foundation and also through our enterprise business unit and also our consumer business unit. With the Vodacom Foundation, this is part of our socio-economic development initiatives with our government. And here we have a Vodacom mobile education program, which we started way back, I think in 2008, to institutionalize it. And we do this in partnership with the Department of Basic Education. We have connected schools. So far, Vodacom has connected 3,000 schools in the country. And by connected schools, we mean we provide the schools with laptops, tablets, interactive boards, and we also provide them with connectivity. We also have teacher centers. Out of the government's 147 teacher centers, we have connected 92 teacher centers across the country. And we work with the Department of Basic Education to provide digital literacy for the teachers. And the reason why we provide teacher training is because we believe that we cannot have connected schools, but the teachers that are supposed to be providing the content are not empowered with the use of ICTs. To us, an empowered teacher through digital technology makes the learning experience of the learners to be exciting. And then we also have an e-learning platform, which I will speak about extensively. We call it the Vodacom eSchool. And then we also have a Vodacom ICT Youth Academy. We've got 10 across the country, where we take young people with matric certificates, but who, because of their socioeconomic circumstances, cannot afford to go to college or to university. And then in partnership with Microsoft, Cisco, and Google, we take them through a 1 year or 1.5 years program, which is accredited by MICT CETA, and they get ICT qualifications, and this gives them an opportunity to get jobs. And then lastly, of course, we provide bursaries, mainly in the STEM subjects.
It definitely sounds like you guys have a lot of different programs going on and a lot of initiatives, and it actually sounds like there's a lot of investment involved. I'm thinking about the data that's being provided, the connectivity, the devices that you were talking about just now. It actually does sound, you know, like a lot is going on in terms of actually, you know, putting money where your mouths are when it comes to investing in e-learning. So one of the things that we really were curious about is how have you guys sort of gone about creating some sort of sustainable business models around education, you know, that could actually spur other corporate players to actually invest in the space? Because I'm sure a lot of people might look at it as one of those things that it's money out constantly, which might not be attractive to some corporate players out there. But you guys, you know, you seem to be going forward with it. How have you guys gone about addressing some of those issues?
Yes, since the inception of our education programs, we have spent about 300 to 400 million rands, and we plan to spend another 500 million rands in the next 5 years. This is the amount of commitment that we have in education. And it is because we don't do this alone. It is because we do it with partnerships, mainly with government. So, as I said, we provide technology and government provides the content. And then we then bring other partners such as your Microsoft and Google. We believe in the comprehensive approach to education, where the focus is not just on the learner, but it is also on the teachers, as I mentioned. It is also on the bringing the parents on board, the community, ensuring that there is adequate infrastructure. And infrastructure, from our point of view, will be ICTs. But we also do a little bit of brick and mortar, for instance, where some of our connected schools have got improper ablution facilities. We demolish those pit latrines and we replace them with proper and safe ablution facilities. And then we also look at nutrition and psychosocial support. And what we have done in 2019, out of the 3,000 schools that we have connected, we have created what we call the Vodacom Schools of Excellence. We have isolated 12 schools, and we created an excellence model. And there we bring everything that we do in the education space, and then we also bring other partners. So each school of excellence has got a refurbished state-of-the-art computer lab. It costs us about 300,000 to 600,000 rands to finish a computer laboratory. And then we load in the computer lab the Vodacom eSchool platform, which is a zero-rated platform. And by zero-rated, it means that if you are a Vodacom subscriber, you don't have to pay for data to access the content. The eSchool has got government-approved curriculum from grade R to grade 12. And today it is sitting with about 1.2 million registered users. We also deploy graduates from the Vodacom ICT Youth Academy in our schools of excellence, who serve as IT technicians. And they also do troubleshooting, and they also carry the teachers and the learners by the head. They also identify the learners who need extra tutoring. And then we provide Vodacom volunteers who specialize in the STEM subjects to provide virtual tutoring. And then we also bring the communities, focusing on the parents. So we have started a program around our schools of excellence called the Vodacom Women in Agriculture, where we have partnered with the Nelson Mandela Foundation, Global Citizen, UN Women, and South African Women in Farming.
And then on the last point for this discussion, how do you see, because we are going through this period of transition, and it's likely that we will be in this state for the coming months, you know, lots of reports from scientists saying that it will only be maybe next year that we'll start maybe seeing some type of vaccines, all of that stuff. So in terms of education, you know, where do you guys sort of see things? Do you anticipate that people are going to go back to school and we'll have some type of a hybrid model of e-learning plus in classroom, or are we just going to see, you know, less of learners in class going forward?
Yeah, we believe that blended learning would be the best to cater for the students and the learners with different needs, because blended learning has got a little bit of classroom and also a little bit of e-learning. And this will assist the learners who are slow, because if you introduce e-learning across the board without taking into consideration that some of the learners will need to be guided by a teacher, therefore we will be failing the learners. I know it, like with my sister was looking after her grandchildren at the beginning of the lockdown, and she was complaining that even though she is educated, she was struggling to take them through their lessons, because what they get taught today and how they get taught is different from how she was taught 30, 40 years ago. So blended learning is the best. But we also advocate for blended learning because not all areas of the country are covered from a network perspective. There are areas where the network is not strong because of a number of reasons. One of the reasons would be because of a lack of spectrum, and also now during load shedding, even though you've got data, if you don't have UPS, you find yourself destitute. And therefore, it is important that you should have a learning model that will cater for both e-learning and classroom learning.
So that was us with Takalani Nechitenze, who is the External Affairs Director for Vodacom South Africa, just giving us a roundup of some of their investments in terms of e-learning, talking about the fact that when it comes to e-learning for them, it's something that's not being looked after by just like one part of the company. It's something that's being fostered in a number of their business units. Also talking about the fact that they haven't gone out about this by themselves. There's a lot of partnerships that they have in place. I'm highlighting one with Microsoft that they recently launched. Also, just ending off the conversation, talking about the fact that we are likely to see a more blended sort of learning model going forward when kids are finally really able to go back to school and things are a bit safer, simply because simply online may not be the best in terms of interaction. She is just highlighting the fact that in some communities there isn't that ability to have connectivity. Network is bad in some cases, and also just making sure that interaction is in place. So that's been it for this part of the show. When we return, we'll be hearing just around how students have been coping with moving to e-learning, and how institutions have also made that switch. So keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
Forget what the little birdie told you. Follow us at BoFM and join the conversation. The Business Buzz.
In our COVID Business Watch this week, our producer, Slin Limsi, we spoke to some learners just around what their experience has been. The key questions is, do you think e-learning is effective or is it not? At the same time, is it something that South Africa should invest in, or is it a country that may need to actually find an alternative way to actually teach kids during these unprecedented times? Like a pandemic. To begin with, she spoke to Sihle Nyubuse, who is a WITS BSc property student and an aspiring property and banking executive. Here's what they had to say.
So the short answer is not yet. I think it definitely has the potential to be effective and complement the current way of learning. And I think that we are taking strides, globally towards getting ready for the internet-based wave that accompanies e-learning. But real impact can only be felt if other shortcomings associated with internet accessibility can be addressed. Without addressing these, I don't think that e-learning can positively affect both students and lecturers or teachers. I definitely think that every country should invest in e-learning as a complementary means of learning, South Africa included. The issue, I think, lies in how we tend to look at e-learning, either as a tool that is here to replace traditional ways of learning, or as some sort of quick fix because of the times we find ourselves in right now, and then after the pandemic, we scrap it and return to how things were done before the pandemic. Quite a few number of institutions and schools around the country were taking baby steps already towards transitioning to a hybrid system of learning that welcomed e-learning facets. Sure, we can't deny that, like many things, the virus has put a spotlight on the way students get educated, and it's no secret that initial stages of it have been quite imperfect on a broader scale. However, that being said, I do think that within these unprecedented times, there lies an opportunity for those in the relevant positions to make decisions that are proactive in introducing the e-learning systems alongside the traditional ways students get educated already.
We also spoke to Onalena Mtekuza, who is a final year BSc property studies student and one of three partners in a startup property firm that is currently involved in the construction management of 24 residential units. Here's what she, you know, shared with us about her e-learning experience.
Yes, I think learning online is effective. Can definitely be effective. And the reason I think that is because of essentially what access to the internet has shown us. The internet has taken information that was previously thought to be very exclusive or very specialized and disseminated it to people for free. In a lot of cases, in some cases you have to pay a small fee, but in a lot of cases you can find a lot of information on the internet for free. And I think that e-learning can do the same for education. It can take world-class quality education and give it to everybody at a fraction of the cost. And I think that the benefits of learning at your own pace and speed are possibly even better suited for retaining information, which is what education should be. It shouldn't be about just regurgitating things all the time. It should be about trying to understand and grasp exactly what it is that's taught. And I think online learning can do that for us. In South Africa, however, I think the biggest things that we face in terms of challenges are internet infrastructure and access to tools such as laptops and tablets, and also the fact that schools are often function more than, you know, just an educational role in our country. Children sometimes need schools for feeding schemes or, you know, just as a place to get away from societal issues that we have, such as alcohol abuse and, you know, violence in the home. But I definitely think that if done correctly, online learning can be quite effective in this country. But I think South Africa needs a hybrid solution, a solution where there is access to the physical asset, but definitely access to the infrastructure required in order to have effective quality education reach all people, no matter the wealth gap.
You don't have to be a liker to like things.
Oh my God.
So like us on Facebook.
Like us on Facebook.
Facebook. At VFM in brackets, voice of Vince. You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz. We are talking about e-learning on this edition. Remember that you can keep in touch with us on Facebook. We are VFM, that's Voice of Vits. You can also find our other Facebook page, that is Vits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VFM. And then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. Now, we've sort of learned what's going on in terms of the e-learning space from a number of different quarters, the corporate side, and even just what it means to be a student in these interesting times of education. But right now we want to sort of get what it means from an educator's point of view, the institutions themselves, the actual teachers on the front line, the people that are actually have had to make the change and are actually dispersing and disseminating the information. And on the line we are joined by Brian Plunger, who is program director at Henley Business School and is also an adjunct lecturer at the Catholic University and at the same time an educator at St. David's Marist in Sandton. Brian, greetings to you.
Good day, good day, good day to you, Mdiwa. How are you? Thank you very much for the privilege of being on your show.
No. Thank you for joining us. I think as you were hearing us just now, we're just talking, you know, from different points of view. I guess a good place for us to start is just what has been your experience of online learning? What has, you know, COVID-19 done to education from your vantage point in the last couple of months?
Interesting. It has been disruption and disruption in a both good and I think in a growth sense too. Disruption in the sense that the traditional classroom where you have learners sitting down and where you as the facilitator or the educator has direct physical contact with them has now changed and has now moved. And I would like to say that I'm coming from a place where I'm quite fortunate and to some extent even privileged, because not everyone else in South Africa or not every educator or lecturer or anyone who's facilitating within the higher education space or basic education space has that opportunity to be switching over to virtual learning. So that came with a lot of pain, that came with a lot of unlearning and relearning, because some of us were trained. When I trained to be a facilitator or a lecturer or even a teacher, I wasn't given the tools to embrace the fourth industrial revolution. And we're starting to realize that the future is now. This is it. So yeah, that's been the experience.
Okay, so Brian, can you just give us a sense of the type of teaching that you do or the type of educating that you do? Because I can imagine, you know, with what we said earlier on, it sounds like you are teaching at many different levels. You hinted to it just now where you said both basic and higher. Can you give us a sense of what, I guess, your day or week actually looks like when you are in full education? Educator mode.
When I'm in full educator mode, I start my day at about 7:30, and from 7:30 until 2:30, I'm in the classroom. And this time, I could be teaching from grade 8 until matric level, right? Then after two, I could then be in an undergraduate class at one of the faculties that I'm in, and I'm teaching. I teach up until honors level, so I'll be in the lecture hall between 3 and 6, and sometimes I even go late in the evening, say up until 9 p.m. if I've got lectures on a particular day. On weekends, I also have lectures, say mornings between 8:30 and about 12. And yeah, so that's what my day is like. So I do a lot of talking. I do a lot of talking, a lot of teaching, a lot of marking, and a lot of facilitating. Yeah.
And have you found, you know, that ordering of the day that you've just told us now, has that timetable shifted or changed in any way because you were talking earlier on that you do have that privilege of being able to facilitate online. Have you found that the digital component, has that shifted your timetable in any way?
Not at all. So with the digital switch, Mudiwa, what changed was me getting to the classroom. So it has saved me now from driving to different places. All I need to do now is log in. So I just log in into different portals or into different accounts, and I get to do my work. So on one level, it has actually worked to my advantage because I don't need to be running around like a headless chicken. But on the other level, I have to be facing a screen for more than 8 to 9 hours a day.
I guess that then begs the question of what has the response been? Do you find there's a certain level that has, perhaps accepted this new technology better than another? Or, do people just generally say, but Brian would just prefer to be in your classroom? Or would you say that, one group, either older or younger, is probably better suited to the e-learning environment than the next from what you've been seeing?
It actually depends with the demographics. By that I mean in terms of the age and, maybe their history and their background and where they're coming from and, all those things that constitute their demographics. So a big portion of my learners have loved it. They've loved it because they can do it in their own time. So instead of having the 1 hour lesson with virtual learning now, you cannot, especially within the basic education, which is the high school phase, you cannot take the whole 45 minutes lesson and be talking and, maybe asking questions because they get less engaged. So, we've had to change. So instead of doing 45 minutes, sometimes you do 20 minutes, give exercises, worksheets, then they log off and they're fine. Then maybe when they come back 2 days later, it's a worksheet and maybe some exercises and they write something. We test comprehension, knowledge, understanding. So the model, it has really changed. So that group has loved it. But when I look at my senior students, especially those that are now in the business school that I'm associated with, some of them, it has not been easy for them because most they do is use a smartphone and check emails and send emails. But sitting behind a screen and listening and participating and being put in breakout rooms can actually be a bit of a pain. It feels like going to the dentist. But unfortunately, they realize that if they do not jump on board, then they are actually going to be disadvantaged because the world is still moving in as much as we're in lockdown right now.
No, I definitely see what you're saying. I like the analogy that you gave just now that for some learners, it's like going to the dentist. I guess the other question to then get your thoughts on is this issue of inequality. We can't escape the demographics and socioeconomic issues in this country. How do you perhaps say that some of these things can actually be bridged? Because I'm sure, a lot of students, I'm just thinking about at least, tertiary and all of that. Some students do have access to good internet connections, laptops and tablets and the like. But at the same time, there are a fair number of people within our society, perhaps outside of, Henley and stuff like that. But how do you think we can help to close that gap? Because whether we like it or not, e-learning probably seems to be the best way to keep kids out of trouble and engaged and learning during this time.
Okay, so let's take 3 steps backwards. I want to give you some numbers, and these numbers are going to tell you a story. Out of every 100 learners in South Africa, we are told 60, only 60 out of that 100 are going to sit for their matric exam. And of those 60, only 37 are going to pass. And of those 37, only 12 are going to go into university or will make it to university. And of those 12 that make it to university, only 6 are actually going to complete their undergraduate studies within a space of 4 to 3 years. Now, that should tell you and me something.
That is scary. Well, what you've just described is very scary.
Exactly. It is. So, out of 100, 60 are going to sit for their matric exams, and out of that 100, 37 will pass. those 37 that are going to pass, 12 are going to make it into a university. Of those 12 that are going to make it into a university, only 6 are going to complete their undergraduate degree within a space of 4 to 3 years. Now, what is that telling us? It's telling us of the systematic and structural injustice that exists in a country like ours called South Africa. It's systematic. It's beyond COVID. It's beyond COVID. What COVID has done is COVID has just exposed the inequalities that exist in our country, which we've all known, but now they've actually now been brought to the forefront. And of those 6 who are going to graduate, right, we are told out of 100, 60 are going to sit for their matric exams, and out of that 100, 37 will pass. Of those 37 that are going to pass, 12 are going to make it into a university. Of those 12 that are going to make it into a university, only 6 are going to complete their undergraduate degree within a space of 4 to 3 years. Now, what is that telling us? It's telling us of the systematic and structural injustice that exists in a country like ours called South Africa. It's systematic. It's beyond COVID. It's beyond COVID. What COVID has done is COVID has just exposed the inequalities that exist in our country, which we've all known, but now they've actually now been brought to the forefront. And of those 6 who are going to graduate, right, we are told only 4 are going to get jobs. So there's one conclusion. We need to relook at our educational system in South Africa. Why? Because the education system in South Africa is failing people. It is. And I mentioned about now the fourth industrial revolution, which we were talking about years ago. It is here. Here it is. We thought it was going to come when we were in our 50s and 40s, but here it is now. Thanks to COVID, it has been accelerated. Here it is. So how do we change? Not in the traditional way, obviously. In the higher education sector, we obviously have good people, and our institutions have good procedures. We've got innovation hubs, and some of our institutions are evolving from traditional institutions and colleges, but some institutions have been slow to adapt. And that includes our government too.
Yeah. So that's Brian Plunger just, making us reflect on what education is going to look like. Brian, I want to end off with you perhaps on a lighter note, just noting what you've just said now about how things are never going to go back to what they were. And right now, since we are talking about e-learning, I'm sure it has forced you personally to change the way that you teach, or have to be, a bit more creative. You spoke earlier on about the fact that you can't just talk for 45 minutes because some of the kids are going to switch off and stuff like that. So as we end off, what type of creative ways have you found to actually, inject ways to keep your learners entertained and engaged during your e-learning sessions?
There has to be a balance. So gone are the days when we, in education, where we had to memorize things, be it in history or in geography, where we literally had to memorize what is the capital city of Kenya, right? And who founded or who discovered the Victoria Falls. We had to memorize that because we were told that it was a particular person, but technically it was not him, right? The one who discovered the Victoria Falls, or what is called the Mosia Tunya. In short, what I'm saying is education now has to encourage problem solving it has to move away from just linear thinking, just thinking in terms of linear and regurgitation. We need to support philosophical openness, independent inquiry, and let us also be more pragmatic about creating social mobility, transforming lives, and possibly even building prosperity within our context of South Africa. So we can't use that same model of just regurgitating. We need to be more innovative in our approach towards education. And this is where it's exciting to be in this space.
So that was us with Brian Mhlanga, who is a program director at Henley Business School and also an adjunct lecturer with the Catholic University and a full-time educator with St. David's Marist in Sandton, just giving us an overview of what education is looking like in this digital world, because he's just saying that he's had to shift almost everything to e-learning, and that e-learning is the future. It's here to stay. We aren't going to go back to the way that things are. That's what he's saying. He's also just talking about the fact at the end there that in terms of shifting the landscape or the focus of education, there needs to be a shift in lens as well, that education isn't just about linear thinking anymore or about regurgitation and memorizing facts and figures. It's about, it should be about problem solving and actually encouraging, you know, inquiry, discussion, debate, and, you know, some of the, you know, more philosophical things, because the information is actually just readily available. If someone wants to know what the capital of Kenya is, they can just Google it, you know, but then what do you actually do with the information after that? So that's it in terms of this segment. On the other side of this, we come to the end of the show.
You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
And with that, we've come to the end of today's show. Thank you so much to Takaladi and Brian for just sharing, you know, some of their insights with us around what the online or e-learning space is looking like from, I guess, that investment point of view with corporates that are putting in, you know, programs and initiatives, as well as, you know, the educator side, you know, Brian telling us about what the shifts are looking like, you know, from his vantage point, you know, teaching, you know, at different levels. And then at the same time, thank you to, you know, the students on Alena together with Sihle for letting us know what their actual experience as learners has been when it actually comes to this e-learning revolution. Personally, I think it's definitely a good thing. I agree with Brian that, you know, e-learning is probably going to be a good equalizer, but it can only equalize as much as we give opportunities to people to have access to some of the tools that actually enable e-learning, whether it's access to data, tablets, computers, whatever it is. We actually need to make some of that access available. More importantly is just the fact that all of this is just marking yet another shift in the way that our economies are going to be working. We've spoken a lot about working from home, and now there's the online education space, which is going to fundamentally shift the way that people and learners go about educating themselves, and also an opportunity for people that already have degrees, for example, to enhance some of their own capabilities. So we're keen to hear what some of your thoughts are. Are you an e-learner? What has your experience been? Do you think that e-learning could replace the classroom? Is the classroom still a necessary thing? Let us know what you think on Facebook. We are Via FM, that's the voice of Vitz. You can also find our other Facebook page, that is the Vitz Radio Academy. And then on Twitter, we're hashtag BusinessBuzz. And you can also find our handle, that is at Via FM. You can also search for us on iono.fm, and all our podcast links are there. And then all our content is available on vitz.journalism.co.za/business. So with that, we've reached the end of today's show. Thank you to our team. Our technical producer is Kutlane Surame, together with our executive producer, Glory Mabuza. Our producers, Slindile Msibi, together with the Simbarashe Honde. And welcome back to our producer, Ntando Qimba. So it seems that there's been a lot of prodigals coming back to the team, and we welcome everyone back. Don't miss the Business Buzz, same time, same place next week for more insight into the world of business. But before we get into all that next week, don't turn that dial, because there's more great content coming up on the VAU FM lineup. So for myself, Mudiwa Mob, Justice Gavaza, and the rest of the team, it is a good afternoon and take care.
Mob Justice on the Business Buzz. The Business Buzz Podcast.